So it's Ecclesiastes chapter 3 today. It's there on the inside of the sheets that we were given as we came in, starting at verse 1. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to tear, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time for war, and a time for peace. What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the busyness that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. That which is already has been. That which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away. Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time for every matter and for every work. I said in my heart, with regard to the children of man, that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the beasts, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upwards and the spirit of the beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him?
Paul, thanks very much for that reading. Good to be back for Ecclesiastes chapter 3, which I guess those verses 1 to 8, are probably the best known words in the whole book, immortalised by The Byrds in 1965. Their hit single, Turn, 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 reached the top of the charts in the US. Many people have commented on the beauty of these verses. After all, the whole of life is here. Birth and death, weeping and laughter, silence, speaking, war and peace. This is what life is like. But here, I think, is the question. How does the poem leave you feeling? Yes, it's a beautiful poem to read, but notice the punchline is not life is beautiful. Instead, the punchline is verse 9. What gain has the worker from his toil? And verse 10, I've seen the business, literally the burden that God has given to the children of man. Time is elusive. It's hard to pin down. There's no obvious order or sequence of the things in verses 2 to 8. Life is full of loose ends, twists and turns, things we don't understand, things we have no control over, things that just hit us, they just happen to us. Every day and every week, we decide how we're going to use our time. And yet, of course, the seasons of life are completely out of our control. I'd like this week to be a week of laughter, please, because I'm rather busy. I can have some sorrow next Thursday morning. I've got a bit of a quieter diary then. And by the way, I think I'll plan for November to be a time of starting new things and reaping, because actually life has been full of disaster and struggle. I mean, you know, life just doesn't work like that, does it? We never know what's coming. And I guess some of us are in the midst of that kind of thing at the moment. In other words, your diary will tell you what you're doing this week. But who knows whether it's going to be a week of weeping and sadness or a week of laughter and joy. There's so often the sense, isn't there, that things could take a turn for the worse quickly. Perhaps that job you're aiming at, or that promotion that someone has suggested you might get, or that relationship that's been started. Who knows how quickly things might go into reverse. We're not in charge. The times and seasons of life are beyond our control. And so the big question we've got to ask is why? Why has God arranged life like this? And the chapter gives us two reasons, and I put them there on the outline that you were given as you came in. Firstly, so that we have a right fear view of God. Have a look at verse 14. God has done it so that people fear before him. Now, to fear God in the Bible is to have a big view of God. It is to have a right view of God, not a kind of frightened view of God, not a cosmic bully view of God, as someone has put it, but rather a right regard and sense of awe for who God is. After all, Ecclesiastes is part of a group of Old Testament books known as wisdom literature, together with Psalms, Proverbs, Job, where we're told that the fear of God, the fear of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. In other words, if we want to live wisely in God's world, it begins with a right regard for who God is. The God who, verse 11, has made everything beautiful in its time. There's an overall masterpiece towards which God is working, both in his world as a whole and also in individual lives. We simply experience, don't we, the different phases of life, the different seasons of life that are verses 2 to 8. But God is the one who plans and sets those times in motion. Yes, verse 11, God has put eternity into man's heart. We're not like animals. We do ask big questions. We have a cat at home. As far as I can tell, the biggest questions he asks about life are, is this person going to feed me? Is that thing worth chasing? And can I guard my territory? They're not life's big questions. He has the now in his heart and no more. And yet, of course, as soon as we do ask those big questions of life, we're immediately aware of our limitations. Verse 11, he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. So very unlike God as he plans his world. Verse 14, I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. That which is already has been, that which is to be already has been. Young children often get frustrated, don't they? Because they don't understand the kind of bigger picture of family life and commitments which their lives have to fit into. So what to eat and what not to eat, what to wear, what not to wear, when they can go to bed, who they can go out with, where they can go, what time they got to be back, when they can have friends to stay, all that kind of stuff. All those things have to be fitted into the bigger picture of family life. Work responsibilities, a budget, caring perhaps for relatives, tying up loose ends, coordinating activities, and so on. And it's just the same with us. Behind the scenes, the seasons of life that we do see, stands God's perfect overruling and ordering. Verse 14, nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. There is a perfection in all that God does. Nothing is overlooked. He doesn't make mistakes in the ordering of our lives. And yet, of course, so much is hidden from us. I received an email from a friend over the summer who had just been diagnosed with cancer, and he needed an operation at very short notice. And suddenly, of course, the whole question of time is immediately up in the air. What about my job? What about my family? What about my life? At best, what season of life am I about to enter into? At worst, is this going to be the time to die? Well, in the email, he wrote this. The key thing is remembering such experiences are always designed by God to deepen our faith in him. Life is rarely smooth for very long, and always the Lord allows that which disrupts for his own gracious purposes. So we are to fear God because of his perfect ordering of the times and seasons of life. But there's another reason to fear him, and that is in verses 16 and 17. Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. Here is another time, the time when every matter and every work will be brought into judgment. So often people scoff, don't they, at the idea of judgment. And yet, let me suggest that we long for it. Just think of the outrage that was greeted back in the summer, that greeted the news that Jeffrey Epstein, the American financier and sex offender, had committed suicide in prison. Think of the outrage a parent feels when their child has been wronged. It's a reminder that much as people dislike the idea of judgments, actually we are all hardwired to want justice in our world. The alternative, of course, is a world where there is no judgment, where everything simply ends at the grave. In a world like that, it wouldn't matter how anyone lives. Such a world, of course, would be unspeakably dreadful. And yet, wonderfully, verse 17, God will judge every matter and every work, which means that everything matters, everything counts. God is the judge of all. He has designed life with all its passing seasons so that we have a right view of him. So before we move on, I think it's just worth pausing for a moment to ask the question, how do I relate to God, if at all? Do we treat him as a little god, a godlet, if you like, who is there to give us the kind of life that we think we deserve or the kind of life we'd like to have, that he, in other words, is there to serve us and dance to our tune? Or do we have a right awe of God, the one who is in charge of all the details of life, the times and the seasons which come to us, all wonderfully organised, the one who is the judge of all? But secondly, time is designed like this, not only so that we have a right fear view of God, but so that we have a right dust view of ourselves. Because although we're unlike the animals in that we do have eternity in our hearts, in one way we are just like the animals, and that is that we die. Verse 18. I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beasts, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and to dust all return. Dust. It's an echo of the Lord God's final words to Adam and Eve, right at the beginning of the Bible, in the Garden of Eden. What was it that Satan had said to them in Genesis chapter 3? I put the verse there on the outline. He said, if they ate the fruit, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. Not so much knowing good and evil, but deciding good and evil, right and wrong. Deciding for themselves how they would live in God's world, rejecting God's rule and playing God instead. And in response, God then banishes them from the Garden of Eden. He sends them away from his presence. And every day from then on, they are going to have to live with sin and the effects of sin. And ultimately, they will die. Genesis chapter 3, verse 19. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Do you remember how we said 2 weeks ago that the garden, that Ecclesiastes shows us what life is like outside the Garden of Eden, where the effects of sin are everywhere. Everything is distorted, everything is spoilt and perishing. It's why there's injustice, it's why there's wickedness, and it's why there is death. In other words, life is like that fairground ride, which is enormous fun, but it's You wish it would go on forever, but it's over in a moment. It's like that holiday where it feels as if as soon as you've arrived, you're having to pack your cases again and go home. We want things, don't we, to be significant, to matter, and yet the clock is always ticking. Just think of W.H. Auden's poem, Funeral Blues, immortalised in the film Four Weddings and a Funeral. It begins with the words, stop all the clocks. And it ends poignantly with, I thought that love would last forever. I was wrong. The impermanence of life is oppressive. We want things to be significant. We want to be significant. And yet, nothing lasts. You see, God has ordered life outside the Garden of Eden to make it abundantly clear that we live in a world where the effects of sin and God's judgment on sin are everywhere. That is how life is. We're not like God. We're not in charge of the times and seasons of life. We live in a world full of injustice, a world that is crying out for God to step in, to sort out the mess we've created, a world where everyone will die. So again, before we move on, I think it's just worth asking the question, how do we think of ourselves? Do we kind of move through life as if we are God, trying to be the ones who control our lives, the one who determines the times and the seasons, perhaps getting frustrated when life doesn't work out our way, desperately trying to stave off the advance of old age? I take it that if we have a right view of ourselves, it stops us needing to be in control of everything that happens. I take it also means that death will become part of our lives. You see, it's not surprising, is it, that in our culture, which has turned its back on God, it's not surprising that it's also a culture which cannot face up to death, let alone speak about death. Because death reminds us that we are not God. I take it for those who trust in Jesus, things should be very different. One of the best books I've read on Ecclesiastes is this one. It's by David Gibson. It's called Destiny. And the subtitle is Learning to Live by Preparing to Die. It's rather shocking, isn't it? Learning to Live by Preparing to Die. The point is that this world is not the real deal. There is a new creation to come. And yet we insist, don't we, so often on living as if this world is the real deal, the ultimate thing to live for, the ultimate thing to invest ourselves in. But it's not. So a right fear of God, a right view of ourselves. Let me spend our last few minutes thinking about the implications in terms of how we should live. Firstly, and this may be surprising, firstly, we are to enjoy God's good gifts. Because this is what frames the chapter. Have a look at chapter 2, verses 24 and 25. Actually, you can't. Trick question. Let me read it for you. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also, I saw, is from the hand of God. Now, you can look at chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. I perceive there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. So before chapter 3, the middle of chapter 3, and then the end of chapter 3, you get a similar echo. Verse 22, so I saw there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. What do you say? What's going on there? Well, perhaps, like me, you've had your fair share of cooking disasters, and you carefully assemble all the ingredients, you're excited about trying out this new recipe. The photograph in the recipe book or online looks absolutely fantastic, as, by the way, it always does. But when you get it out of the oven, you realise that things have gone very badly wrong indeed, and it's burnt and it's ruined. But then you notice there's a tiny bit that actually isn't burnt, a kind of modest residue, if you like, of what it might have been. And so although you can't, you know, you can't invite loads of friends round to enjoy it, you can nonetheless sit down with a cup of coffee and enjoy that little bit of cake. Now, I think that's, in a sense, what is going on here in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. As the preacher surveys all the ruins of life in a fallen world, he notes the modest residue, if you like, of the goodness of God's original creation. A good meal, or perhaps for some, a job that we enjoy, not for everyone, but for some. Or perhaps the gift of friendship, or perhaps that holiday, or time spent with family. It doesn't undo everything we've seen in Ecclesiastes chapters 1 and 2. Everything is still vanity, everything is brief, here today and gone tomorrow. And yet they can be received as God's good gifts. So enjoy God's good gifts. Secondly, trust God's good purposes. Because the New Testament gives a very special promise to those who belong to Jesus Christ. And that's why I've had Romans chapter 8 printed for us on the piece of paper where the reading is. Remember, we looked at this chapter earlier on, 2 weeks ago. We saw earlier on in the chapter how the whole of creation has been affected by our sin and rebellion, how the whole of creation groans, how we groan as we live in a world where the effects of sin have got into everything. So what is God's promise for those who belong to Jesus? Well, have a look at these verses, Romans 8, verses 28 to 30. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those whom he predestined, he also called. And those whom he called, he also justified. And those whom he justified, he also glorified. What do you notice? That for those who belong to Jesus Christ, all the seasons of life are purposeful. Verse 28, they work together for good. In other words, whether we're in a time of weeping or laughter or starting things off or or finishing them, whether at the beginning of life or the end of life, whatever season of life we're in, is part of God's loving purpose for us. But you say, what is that good purpose? Well, it's there in verse 29, that we become more like God's glorious Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. And you say, who is this promise for? Because notice, it's not a promise for everyone. It is, verse 28, for those who love God, for those who have put their trust in Jesus. Which means that, yes, life will still hit us in the way that Ecclesiastes chapter 3 describes. Of course it will. We don't know what's coming next. We don't know how long each season of life will last. But we can be assured, those of us who are trusting in Jesus Christ, of the good goal towards which God is working. That, of course, is the road to satisfaction. Satisfaction comes when I know that I am not God. When I accept the boundaries, if you like, of my creaturely existence. When I accept the fact that the times and seasons of life come to me by God's good hand, his wise hand. So often we forget that we are creatures and that God has planned the details of our lives. David Gibson says in his book, living well in God's world means recognizing that when it comes to our own lives, we are not mini gods, and this is his creation, not ours. We have all the pieces of life given to us, and things come and go and seasons change, and it's only God who knows exactly where everything is meant to go, in which order, at what time, and why. Let me pray for us.